I would certainly appreciate an interest in your prayers, the time that I stand before you this morning, and appreciate Brother Craig's prayer, and would appreciate you remembering us the remainder of this portion of the service, and pray that God might bless us for a few minutes. Proverbs 29:2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. I read to you a commentary by a Baptist minister that was written about 300 years ago about this verse. It says in reference to the people mourning, Elder John Gill, it says, or the people will groan under the tyranny and oppression because of the sad state of things. The number of good men is lessened, being either cut off or obligated to flee, the wicked men, and wickedness and wicked men are encouraged and promoted. Heavy taxes are laid upon them, and exorbitant demands made, and cruelty and injustice and arbitrary power exercised, and no man's person and property are safe. I'm glad that my sister's here. We enjoyed a couple of days together and enjoyed the fellowship, and she was sharing with me yesterday about a coach, Bramerton High School in Washington State, that since 2008, those of you that listen to Christian radio, you probably already heard this story. Some of you here, Brother Mark has, and Sister Kathy. That since 2008, the coach voluntarily would offer prayer, sometimes before the game, if not oftentimes before the game, and oftentimes after the game was over with, after the game was completed. This offering of prayer was in no way suggested as being mandatory for the students to even participate in or even attend. And yet the students that were on the football team would gather around, and sometimes they would join in and pray as well. The class president promotes and believes in Satanism. And so the issue was raised and the issue was pushed. And this coach was told that his job was on the line if he continued to offer prayer at the end of the game, even though the game was over with, even though he was stepping off of school property oftentimes, that his job was on the line. And he said, I spent 20 years in the military, and I fought for the liberties and the freedoms that we have, and one of the liberties is to be able to offer prayer. And he basically said, you do what you have to do, but I'm going to pray to the Lord. And he continued praying. And even teammates from the opposing team would come over and gather around and enter into prayer with them as well. And he was fired last week. He went and watched the game on the sidelines. And he said, this is one of the hardest things that I've ever done. His prayers were simple. He thanked God for blessing to be used to have an influence in the lives of these young men. He thanked God for a team spirit. Three or four simple things that he thanked God for in these prayers. I remember a story that Brother Mark told me, and he probably doesn't even remember telling me this. And if I'm making it up, forgive me on this, but he said that when he was a young man, that there was a coach that coached one of their teams, and it was a godly man, and that he needed a godly example in his life. And he said this coach provided that godly example. Well, this happened in Washington State, and it just happened recently, and it was here in the United States of America. Now, wouldn't you welcome more godly examples for the young folks? A group of Satanists attended the game. I saw a picture of them. They looked awful. And one of them dressed up as Satan. Now, I don't know what Satan looks like, but the picture I saw was pretty bad. And they were going to, they did attend the game, and had the school allowed the coach to have the closing prayer at the end of the game, the Satanists then were going to go up and make a presentation, and the individual that dressed up like Satan was going to give an apple to another Satanist, in reference to the story of Adam and Eve. We've come a long way, haven't we? I'm so old that I remember that we started our school day with prayer. I don't know if you did that here in Maryland. We did it in Texas. We also had the Pledge of Allegiance, and we said, one nation under God, without reservation. And we would have prayer over the loudspeaker, and different students would be called up, one each day, to offer prayer. If you turn the clock back another 20 years from when I was a kid in the 60s going to school, you turn it back to the 40s and 30s, Sister Perry says that when she went to school down in North Carolina, she said, not only did we have prayer, she said, our class started with an hour of reading the scriptures, of studying the scriptures, and this was in a public school. And she said, our day started with an hour of prayer, singing little hymns, and reading the scriptures, and that's how our class started, one full hour that we had, the first class of the day. We wonder why that everything is in such chaos here in the United States of America, and yet the influence that folks had of the Bible and of the principles that are taught in the Bible, even if they were not church-going folks at the time, they still had some influence based on what God's Word said in their lives. Maybe they were exposed to it at school. Maybe they were exposed to it at home. Maybe they were exposed to it at church. But you take the Bible out of school, you take prayer out of our nation, and it's very likely that our nation may not stand because God may allow judgment to come upon our land. Has He not already allowed that to happen? Now, I'm not going to step too far over here. Not going to step too far to the right or too far to the left. But I want to just toss this out there as something to consider. We're coming up on an election season. We're coming up on an election. I grew up in the South. My grandparents grew up in the Depression, in the 20s, in the 30s. I heard stories over and over and over again from my grandmother and my grandfather that said that when they grew up, that when Hoover was in office, they said, we narrowly starved to death. There were no jobs. There were folks jumping out of buildings just up here in New York City. There were no jobs around. And they said, when a fellow named Franklin Roosevelt came on the scene, said all of a sudden they came out with, Granddad said, the WPA. You may know what that represents. It meant work for them. And all of a sudden, they were able to, jobs were available. And they went from almost starving, living a life of almost starving, thinking nothing would ever be any better, to all of a sudden, a man came on the scene and was able to create jobs, and those jobs gave them the ability to have an income, and for them, it was the difference in starving to death or being able to provide for their family. Roosevelt ran on the Democratic ticket. My grandparents were sold. The rest of their life, they lived to be Granddad almost 90, Grandmother past 90, and she couldn't tell you what day of the month it was or how old she was or even the names of her children, but she could tell you she was a Democrat. And she held to that as long as she lived because of the experience that they had incurred back in the 30s. Now, if we'd gone through what they went through, it might have affected us the same way. I have not ever experienced almost starving. I'll find a McDonald's somewhere. I've never starved. Not because of not being able to get to food. And that's where they were. Even though that was a major factor in their life, I'm talking about whether it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, that's not the basis upon how we go about electing the ones that are going to represent this country. I want you to consider some things based on what God's Word has to say. First of all, if you think that it doesn't mean anything to vote, you say, well, whatever's going to come is going to come. It doesn't matter if I vote. It doesn't make any difference. Don't let Satan sell you that lie. Did you know that just if Christians across this country united together and voted based on godly principles, make a major difference? I remember when I first got my voting card. I was so excited about that. But you know, we shouldn't use it loosely. We shouldn't go and just check the box. Those of you that have voted, check the box and just vote a straight ticket one way or the other. We should actually consider the individuals and the principles in which they stand and represent, because they're going to represent you and I. Now, there's a couple of verses. I want to look at several verses here, and I pray the Lord will bless us for just a few minutes. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, if you want to write these verses down and and go back and read them. I'd encourage you to do that. I'm not going to read all of this, but this gives an example right here. The Lord had led Israel through prophets, through godly leaders. God had protected and provided and led Israel for about 1,000 years. And then Israel, rather than look to the Lord and thank God for providing the prophets for them, for leading them himself and directing them, why, he even led Abraham by a pillar of fire and by a cloud at night, and God provided and led for them and met their every need and took care of them. All of a sudden, Israel rises and they say, "We want to be like those folks over there. We want a king. We want a king that will lead us. We want a king that's going to make decisions for us. We want a king that's going to direct us. We want a king." And God says, and you can read it here in 1 Samuel chapter 8, it says that the people told Samuel, we want a king. Says in verse 6, says, "You're getting old," and said, "and thy sons walk not in thy ways." He says, "Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." But it says that the thing that Samuel said, that Samuel went to the Lord and said that the people want a king, and said, Samuel said to the Lord, "Give us a king to judge us." And so Samuel goes to the Lord and tells the Lord what the people are saying. And it says the thing that the people asked for displeased the Lord. It says that it displeased the Lord, the thing that the people were asking for. And the reason that it displeased the Lord is that in the past they were looking to the Lord. They were leaning on the Lord. They were asking the Lord to direct them. And now they're saying, "We want what other folks have. We want a king." And God says, "Okay, I'm going to give you a king. But here's what it's going to be like." And you can go through and read it. I won't read all of it. But he says, here's what it's going to be like. He says, he's going to take of your provisions. He's going to take of your fields. He's going to take of your vineyards, your olive yards, even the best part of it. He's going to give them to his servants. He's going to take of your servants. He's going to take of your goodliest young men. He's going to take a tenth of your sheep. And in that day ye shall cry out, because your king, which ye have chosen you. And he says, and all of a sudden you want a king to lead you. And then you're going to feel the oppression. And you're going to cry out to me. But he says, I'm not going to hear. He says, I'm going to give you what you want. I'm going to let you have what you want. You want a king? You're going to have a king. But I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be what you think it's going to be. And he says, then when you come to me and you're crying to me and you're crying out to me, he says, I'm not going to hear you. Now, you can read that yourself. That's how I interpret it here. And if you interpret it differently, let me know. But that's how I interpret it. And so Samuel goes back to the people and he talks to the people. And the people, he tells the people, he tells them, he says what God reveals to him. And it says, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. And they said, nay, but we will have a king over us, that we may also be like other nations. Any other nation you can think of that you want to be like? They said, we'd like a king so we can be like other nations. And that our king may judge us, and that he'll go out before us, and that he's going to fight our battles. They thought that he was the solution to all their problems. When if they'd have just thought back just a little bit, it was actually the Lord that fought many of their battles for them. But they said, we want a king. We want to be like other nations. We want one that's going to go out before us, and we want one that's going to fight our battles for us. And it says, Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he rehearsed them, or prayed to God. It says he rehearsed them in the ears of the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, hearken unto their voice. And he says, and make him a king. And you can go through and you can continue reading, and you can see the judgments that came upon them and the difficulties. And God was displeased that they were looking to a man rather than looking to God. In Daniel, if you want to turn to Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 2, Daniel gives a decree right here, and this is something for us to hold on to, especially as we're facing upcoming elections. Young folks, please listen up, because I believe that we are facing some of the most difficult times in the lives of young people that we've ever faced, and I believe that ungodliness is so rampant right now, and Satan has you as his target. So please listen up. Daniel chapter 2. Nebuchadnezzar is an old ungodly king, and he has a dream. It says he was awakened in his sleep, and he had a dream, and it says, and you can read this in Daniel chapter 2. It says the dream troubled him. Anybody ever have a dream that it troubles you? And it's always worse at nighttime. When you wake up the next day, it's usually a little bit better. But it says that he had a dream and it troubled him, and he didn't know the interpretation of the dream. So Nebuchadnezzar calls the smart people. He calls the magicians. He calls the soothsayers. He calls the wizards. He calls the smart people. And he says, now I want you to interpret and tell me what the meaning of this dream is. And so the magicians come, the soothsayers come, and they said, Nebuchadnezzar, there is not a man on this earth that can tell you what the interpretation of your dream is. Nobody can do that. We can't do it, and there's nobody that can do it. We don't know what the interpretation of your dream is, and nobody else. And he said, away with them. He commanded that their life be taken because they couldn't tell him what the interpretation of the dream was. Daniel, a young man, hears about it. And he calls some of his friends together, and he says, I want you to pray and I want you to fast that God will bless me to have the understanding of the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And it may spare the lives of some of these folks and may spare our life. And so Daniel, it's told that Daniel is able to interpret the king's dream. And I'm not going to go into all of the king's dream and all of what that is. But Daniel says something as he's revealing this even to Nebuchadnezzar. He says, Nebuchadnezzar, he said, and I think we ought to hold on to this because I think this is still the case today. Chapter 2, verse 19. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And then listen to this. And he, talking about God, and he changeth the times and the seasons. You think it just happens to be this beautiful fall time that's probably the most beautiful time of the year? Oh, I love it. I love seeing the beautiful trees. In fact, Brother Greenfield said last Sunday, he said, we just drove around looking at all the beauty of the fall season. He says, God's in charge of the seasons. I don't have a problem believing that, do you? I couldn't create a tree as beautiful as this gold or yellow tree that's out here in the front. I just get the blessing of admiring it. But I know that there's somebody that's even created that tree and caused it to things to come forth in such a way that we had this beautiful season, this fall time, soon to have winter and then spring and then summer again. And he says it's God that's in charge of the seasons. But he doesn't stop there. I don't have a problem believing that God's in charge of the seasons. I believe God's in charge of them. He says he is here. He says God is in charge of the seasons. And it says, and he removeth kings, and he setteth up kings, and he giveth wisdom to the wise, and knowledge to him that know understanding. And he revealeth the deep and secret things, and he knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light that dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O God of my fathers, who hath given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee, that thou hast made known unto us the king's matter. He says, by the way, I'm thanking God that he's revealed to us what the king's dream was, that we can tell the king and reveal this to him. But he says right here, did you get what he said? He said, God is in charge of the seasons. And he also says, it's God that puts kings in positions of authority, and it's God that removes kings. Now you may be saying, well, Brother Stephen, if that's the case, why do I even need to go vote? If God's going to put them in authority, if God's going to position them there, then why do I even need to vote? Let's look at another example. It's going to teach us a principle here in just a minute. It's going to teach us a very strong principle. It's mentioned again in Romans chapter 13. Romans chapter 13. Romans 13, verse 1. Says, let every soul be subject unto higher powers. That's talking about you and I. Let every soul be subject unto higher powers, for there is no power but of God. And the powers that be... What? I'm the first to tell you, I'm not an absoluter. But it says right here that the powers that be are ordained of God. Well, does that mean that I don't go vote? God's already ordained it. God's already determined it. God's already designed it. He comes on down and he says, wherefore God therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. He comes on down and he talks about that we're to render unto Caesar all that is due unto Caesar. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, it tells us that we're supposed to pray for those that are in positions of authority. 1 Timothy chapter 2 says, pray for those that are in positions of authority. But he clearly says that the powers that be are ordained of God. Well, what does it mean? When the people begin to murmur and complain, when the people begin to get exalted in self, when there became a lot of prosperity and they forgot God in their life, God gave them over to what they wanted. They wanted a king. God gave them a king. They wanted to be like other folks. God said, okay, you can be like other folks. First of all, don't just take your voting card and run, go vote. Yes, it's something you ought to treasure, and it's a blessing to have. And there are a lot of lives that have been lost so that you would have that liberty of having that voting card to be able to go vote. But before you go vote, the first thing that you do is you talk to the Lord. You ask the Lord to have mercy upon our country. You ask the Lord to forgive us of the sins of our lives and the sins of our fathers and our forefathers. Lord, would you have mercy upon this country? We don't value the young folks like we should. No, we turn our eyes when their lives are being taken away even before they're born. And we just turn our head to that and say, it's okay. Or you fast forward the clock to when folks are 80 and 90 plus years of age, and we don't value old age like we should. God, forgive us. God, would you have mercy upon us? God, we've experienced your judgment upon our land. Go over and read Hosea and Joel. We're getting what we've asked for, and we're getting what we deserve. We are. Because he said, that's what you want. That's what I'm going to give you. I'm not a fatalist. I believe that things can be better. I do. Used to. Our forefathers, our grandparents, they had such esteem for those that were in office that sometimes they had a picture of the president hanging in the dining room. And sometimes they named their children after the president. Anybody here know anyone that was named after one of the presidents? Well, I do. Andrew Jackson, George Washington. I know a number of folks. Maybe that's just a Southern thing. But they esteemed them high. They did. Here's some hope. Second Chronicles 7:14. Well, you can back up. He said, it's so good. He says, he talks about sending judgment upon the land of the people. But he comes down and he says, I've judged the land, I've judged the people. He says, if my people, now this is important. This verse is for you. It's not out there for everybody in the world. It's not out there for the ungodly. It's not out there for the folks that are not serving the Lord. This is directed to you and I. It's not just for preachers. It's not just for deacons. It's for everybody. He says, if my people, which are called by my name, that's followers of Christ, that's believers in God, that's Christians, that's people that believe in God and believe that God rules and that He reigns. He says, this verse is to you. There's still some scattered out throughout the United States of America. I'm so very thankful for it. I believe that that is the only reason that God has spared this land is because of these folks He's talking about right here. He says, I've still got a people. He says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves. Now, God has a perfect way of humbling us. If we do not humble ourselves, God knows how to humble us. God oftentimes allows things to come in our life that are weighty, that humble us if we get exalted in self. He says, but if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves, he says, and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways. He mentions a whole handful of things right here, but can I tell you that this is not only talking to us in the church, this is talking to us in America today. He says, if my people will humble themselves, and if they'll pray, and if they'll seek my face, and if they'll turn from their wicked ways, he says, then will I hear from heaven. And he says, and I'll forgive their sin. And he says, and I will heal their land. Is there hope? Absolutely there is. But he says, I want my people to come before me, humble themselves. I want them to seek my face. I want them to pray. And he says, then I will heal the land. Can I tell you, as thankful as I am that there's some godly candidates out there, and I'm very thankful for that. As thankful as I am for that, that's not where the healing of this land's going to be. It's in God. God may bless us with a godly man, and that'll be a great start and a great encouragement. And when the righteous rule, the people rejoice, and there'll be great rejoicing in the land. I heard one candidate, and you'll have to listen. I'm not going to call any out, and I'm not going to endorse them from the pulpit. I'll certainly do it privately if you want to, and may someday do it from the pulpit. But I heard one candidate say, and I can understand this clearly. They said, why are you running for office? He, so that'll tell you at least who it's not, he has 5 grandchildren. And he said, I don't want to walk through what used to be America and show my grandkids what the rubble and remains of what a great country used to be. Now, whether that's with churches or whether that's in this great, wonderful country of America in which we live, I know that I don't have much influence in life, maybe not any. But if I do, I'm going to encourage the Lord's people to try to do right. Some folks say, why do you go up to New York City, have services? I certainly believe that there's other folks beside myself that's trying to serve the Lord up there. Handful of folks that I know. Probably many, many, many that I don't know. But I tell you, if there's ever a city that needs the Lord, it's New York City. Several of us have discussed this. Sister Marcia just saw it, and Brother Phil and several others. I was blessed twice to see the show Amazing Grace. It was incredible in New York City. Right down off Broadway in New York City. It was almost like going to an old Baptist church meeting. And especially at the end when 1,000 people stand up and start singing Amazing Grace. And I thought, at least for this split second right now, I know that God is being praised in this city. I don't know how much longer we're going to have the opportunity to go up and serve the Lord in New York City. You say, you really think that? Well, I really believe it. When the liberties are taken away in a little rural town of being able to pray after a football game, I don't know how much longer we'll have the liberties that we have to serve the Lord unless God intervenes and turns it around. I don't know. I'm going to go everywhere I have an opportunity to speak the name of the Lord. And you should too. Well, in regard to the upcoming election and voting, number one, before you even think about voting, pray that God will bless us with godly men. And pray that God will have mercy upon our land. Pray this prayer right here. God, would you help me to humble myself? Would you help me to seek your face? Would you help me turn from my wicked ways? Would you hear from heaven, Lord? Would you forgive my sins? Would you forgive the sins of my land that I live in? And Lord, would you have mercy upon us? And would you heal our land? Pray that God will give us godly men to vote for. And then vote. Realizing that God might possibly honor your conviction of pursuing a godly candidate. Pray that God will convict you, that He'll bless there to be a godly man to lead the country, and then vote. And then realize that you've done all that God has enabled you to do, and it's ultimately in the hands of God. And if we get a godly, if we get a godly leader to lead our land, the scripture says the people are going to rejoice. Says the people, even the ungodly are going to they're going to experience some of the blessings that will be there from a godly leader. But if God gives us if we elect an ungodly person and God gives that, then it's just like when Israel said, God, we want to be like other folks. We want a king. We don't want you to lead us. We want a king. And God may give us what we deserve. I don't want what we deserve. I want God to have mercy upon us. God knows what's best for us. And I pray God will have mercy upon us. We sing the song that God has shed His grace on thee. That God has had mercy upon us. And truly, God has. I don't know why God had me to be born in 1960. He could have had me to be born in 1900 or 1920 or 1930. But He had me to be born in this season and phase of life. And as Mordecai told Esther when she had an opportunity to be before the king, he said, Esther, how do you know but what God has you here for such a time as this? Ray, I don't know why that God had you to be born 18 years ago, but you're here at a very critical and difficult time. And God may use you and Tristan and Joey and Tim to make a difference. When the righteous rule, the people rejoice. May that be our prayer. May God not give us what we deserve, but may He have mercy upon us. And then may we turn around and give Him the praise and the glory. May God bless you.